Welcome, everybody. This is Rochelle, the Right Now Coach, and you're at the Right Now Mastermind class for February 2014. My guest is Amanda Valentine, and she's an expert on editing. Let me tell you a little bit about Amanda. Amanda honed her editing skills during a decade of teaching writing at Penn State. In addition to fiction, she's edited award-winning tabletop RPG game books. Pulling on her experience as an editor, educator, reader, and parent, Amanda reviews books for middle grade readers at Reads for Tweens, readsfortweens.com, and blogs at ayvalentine.com. So at the end of the call, later in the week when I send out the recording, I'll be sending out all the links to Amanda's stuff again. It was also in the announcement email you got. We're going to start in just a second. If you want to mute your individual line to make the line sound better, that would be great. Push star 6. Welcome, Amanda.
Hi.
So why don't you start by telling us how you got started editing, how this became your career?
Basically, it started when a friend of mine was writing a role-playing book, and he reached a point where it wasn't coming together the way he wanted to, and he asked me to look at it, and I just sort of started editing it. And we had a really great relationship working that way, and in the end, people could tell where I had started working on it, and we decided that was a good sign.
Oh, good.
And so I started out as a volunteer, more or less, pulling on. I've realized that I also taught 7th and 8th grade and 10th grade, and my experience teaching has really taught me what I needed to know as an editor.
Wow.
When you're giving,
yeah.
I'm sorry?
Say a little bit more about that.
When you have to give constructive feedback in a way that improves the student's writing, you have to really think about why it is you have a problem with what's there. You can't just say, oh, this doesn't work for me. You have to look at why that's the case, how they can improve it. And that's what a good editor should do, too.
Oh, that makes a lot of sense. So, you know, before we actually get to, like, working with an external editor, I want to talk a little bit about writers learning the skill of revision and self-editing, because I think that's really, really essential. So what are some of the steps that a writer might go through as they begin to revise their novel or nonfiction book? And before you answer, I just want to tell people, if you want to mute yourself, push star 6. That will keep all the background noise down. Thank you. Okay. Amanda, what are some of our steps we might go through as we begin to revise our book?
I think the first one is some distance.
Okay.
I'm going to backtrack on that. People approach things differently when I don't do a whole lot of writing except for blogging and so on, but I tend to edit as I go. And if that works for you, that's fantastic, and I'm not telling you that you shouldn't do that. You know, reading back over a couple of paragraphs, reading in chunks, however it is that you get words on paper, go ahead and do that. If you're the kind who dumps everything out first, go ahead and do that too. But when you're ready to finally really start what I would look at as the big self-edit, you want to give yourself some distance from it. Don't start as soon as you type in the end. Don't start in on the edits. Do something else for a while. How long that is going to depend on you. But to some extent, you want to cleanse the palate so that you can look at it with new eyes. Because if you're looking at it with the same tired eyes that have been typing blearily for months, you're not going to see the things that you need to see. And you may be discouraged before you even start because there's a lot of hating your writing that tends to happen as you're doing it. And so if you can give yourself some distance from that and get rid of some of the emotions, you'll do a better job of self-editing. So that, I think, is the first thing. Were you going to say something?
Yeah, no, I'm waiting for the next. So once I've cleansed my palate, and I totally get that, Amanda, because I feel like the minute I type the end, I just want to throw the book away. So not a good thing to do. So what do I do next?
Technology is your friend. There are a lot of things that you can do that will fix all of the technical things in your book that don't necessarily require the emotional energy of a full edit. So if you know that you misspell something, do a search for it and fix it all at once. If you turned off your spell check and grammar check, which I think is common, turn them back on and go through and see what gets flagged. Don't ever just trust what it says, but it at least is a good thing to say, oh, maybe that's a little too complex, or, oh, that's true, I did use that improperly, or, wow, that's a misspelling I hadn't noticed. I actually rely on those a lot as I'm editing. I always keep them on, even though they are frequently wrong, but they're always there for me to catch my attention and make me look a little more closely at whatever it's saying is incorrect. So those kinds of things are helpful. I think anything that you can do to give yourself fresh eyes for it. Because you need to look at it as a reader and not as a writer. You need to give yourself that little distance to be able to see how other people are going to perceive it. Oh, and another one. You probably already know the mistakes that you tend to make. For me, it's lie and lay. I mess them up every single time. And so make sure you double-check all of those.
Okay. Now, I'm curious about your process, because I tend to, take passes through my books, based on one thing. So like you said, maybe going through a spell check for a word that I always misspell. But I also take a pass through on point of view. So I'll go through, okay, is the point of view consistent?
Yes.
Or I'll take another pass through and say, okay, I don't know, is the consistency with the colors of the cars, right? Or maybe look at one person's voice and say, is this strong? Is that a helpful technique, or what are some ways that you kind of go through? Because I feel like it's so hard to miss things because there's so much to look at.
There is. Usually what I do is, as an editor, first I have to acquaint myself with the book. So I will read through the entire thing, fixing things that are obvious, putting in questions that I have for the author, and so on. And then after that, I tend to just spot check for a little while. So whatever I had flagged, I will talk to the author about it, and we'll change some things. And then when she gives me back rewrites, I'll look just at those parts so that I'm not reading the book over and over and over again. I'm seeing it in different chunks. And sometimes those conversations will tell me things that need to be flagged through the whole book. And so again, I'll go back through and look just for those things. If you just keep reading it over and over again, you do get fatigue. You get worn out from it. Your brain starts filling in things that aren't there because you've read it so many times that you think they're there. So I look at it in many different ways as I can. And I don't go through it linearly again until we've made a significant change. We've gotten, a significant revision, at which point I'll read through the whole thing again.
So say a little bit more about the different ways you go at it, because I know that book fatigue is such a problem for me as an editor, and especially when I'm working with my own work, because I'm a fast reader. I tend to fix mistakes in my brain as I read, which is not a great skill as an editor. It's not a great tool when I'm editing. And so I will gloss over mistakes again and again and again. So what are some of the different ways you go at it or give yourself fresh eyes?
One thing is to read it out loud.
Okay.
If you have to say every word, then you'll see what you missed. Your tongue will get tangled in the middle of a really complex sentence.
Mm.
And so that can be really helpful. Especially when I'm starting to get a little foggy, reading out loud, it uses different parts of my brain to some extent.
Okay.
And so it helps me overcome the fogginess that can happen when you've immersed yourself in something for hours.
Yeah.
Another thing that helps is to change something, change the font, change the size, something that makes the words look different so that your brain has to process it a little differently. Or I'll change where I am. Go to a coffee shop instead of working at home. Because, again, changing the things around me, I think, makes me more aware of the things that are there. I always proofread post layout because I will see things on my Kindle that I missed 15 times on my computer.
Okay.
But as far as like different ways of going through, for me, it's mostly changing technique and not necessarily looking at specific things until I find them. Like when I find a word that's been capitalized inconsistently, I'll talk to the author, we'll decide on something, and then I'll go and change all of those.
Okay.
Because if I don't change them all at once, I'm going to forget. I'm going to miss one. Another thing I do sometimes is I will just skim, because as your eyes are just looking over, sometimes errors will just spring out at you. At least it's true for me. But again, it's not necessarily engaging your whole emotional brain that you need to put into plot and everything and letting you catch things that are just on the surface.
Wow. So let's, you know, turn a little bit from, and we'll come back to more ideas of how we can revise, and maybe you can give us some more of your tools. But I'm curious about, I mean, it's clear to me I can't do this. I mean, I'm a good editor. I'm good at editing other people's stuff, but I really need someone to help me with my own stuff. So why should I hire an editor? Or why should our listeners hire an editor? What are some reasons you think that editors can be helpful, and at what different stages?
Of course, I'm very biased here because you should hire editors, because that's how I make my living. But I think the biggest thing is that you always need somebody else to look at your book. Always. If you're the only one who's seen it, there are things that you have missed. There are assumptions you've made. Actually, a funny one that I caught as a reviewer was that it was a middle grade book, and she talked about characters doing stuff together, and I read it as innuendo, which is not at all what she meant. So I was like, do you mean did stuff? Did stuff? Like, no. So she went back and changed that.
Oh,
and, but it had never occurred to her that that's how somebody might read it. And so it's always good to have somebody else looking at things without the same assumptions that you have.
Yeah.
Now, you can do that. I'm going to be blasphemous here for a minute. Editors are very, very expensive.
Mm-hmm.
And when you're just starting out, that can feel like an expense that you can't handle right now. And there are some ways around it, but the way that you do that is by intense self-editing and good beta readers, and you absolutely need a good proofreader. You should not ever, in my mind, publish a book without those things.
So explain to our listeners what beta readers are in case they don't know.
Beta readers are the people who read your book while it's in draft and give you feedback on it. And
okay.
Finding good beta readers is not easy, because some are going to say, oh, that's wonderful. Some are going to say, eh. But what you need is constructive feedback. And that's a community that on some level you need to try to make for yourself. Sometimes you'll find them in writers groups. Sometimes you'll find them among your friends. In an electronic age, sometimes you can find them by just putting feelers out on Twitter or Facebook and seeing what you can find. That's how I ended up with Jocelyn Kaler, who I now edit. I was her beta reader first because she's a friend of a friend. And so that's how we sort of started our relationship there. But a good beta reader will tell you where your plot holes are, will tell you when your characterization isn't working, just all the things that your assumptions have been filling in, again, that aren't coming across to the reader. Good beta readers would be able to point those things out. And
wow.
Typically they are dealing with plot and characterization and not sentence level stuff.
Okay.
But not always. Jocelyn has her beta readers before I start editing. It's part of the drafting process for her.
So, and for those of you who don't know, I interviewed Jocelyn, Amanda, and Jocelyn's husband, Nick, in a previous call last June. And when I send out the recording to this call, I'll send out a link to that as well, because they talk a little bit about the process. So what I'm hearing is that a beta reader can kind of be a little bit like that first developmental editor who's
yes.
going to look at the big picture things, kind of plot, character, setting, all those kinds of things that make the story work.
Yes.
Is that right?
Yes. Now it's going to be up to you to figure out how to fix that then, whereas a professional editor will be invested in helping you do that.
Okay. So if we're beta readers, they'll give us some ideas, but we're the ones who have to figure out how to fix it. If we hire a development editor, they may help us fix that. Is that what you're saying?
Yes.
Okay. So that would be the first kind of editor we could hire, would be a development editor. And then the second kind of editor we would hire would be someone who could help us with more of the consistency issues and the grammar and all that stuff.
Right.
Okay. And so, you talked about editing's expensive, but what are some of the things an editor can do for us that a writer might have trouble doing for himself or herself?
I think the big thing is that ideally your editor is your partner, and they are as invested in a good book being out there as you are. Every book that I edit is my interview for my next job. And I want those books to be good. It is not in my interest to let you publish a book that isn't ready to be published. And so, you know, this is not a favor that somebody's doing for you. This is not, you know, your old college roommate who majored in English doing you a favor and saying, oh, yeah, that looks pretty good. Fix some things. You're good to go. This is someone who is nearly as invested in your book as you are.
Mm. That's great.
And ideally, they also know how to help you fix these things, not just that they need to be fixed, but some suggestions for what you might want to do, different tactics you could take. I've had several perfect editing experiences, which is pretty much when I have a comment, I'm saying, you know, this isn't working, you could maybe do this, and suddenly the author says, no, what I need to do is this thing that I never thought of.
Mm.
And so together we are much more than the sum of our parts when you're doing that kind of thing. And, you know, I'm moving things to another level, but then the author jumps much further than I could possibly have gone.
Oh, that's really great. So I guess, you know, as you start talking about that, I'm really curious about process. And so can you maybe talk us through what it's like working with a writer kind of from the beginning of your relationship till the end, just with one project?
To some extent, it depends on the relationship you already have. Most of my fiction editing right now is with Jocelyn, who I already know and I have a relationship with. And so she gives me the rough draft of the book. She will usually write a bunch of things that she has issues with way down at the bottom of the email, so I don't look at that until after I've gone through the book once.
Okay.
And then after I've done my first edit, I look at what she thinks the issues are, because I don't want my perception to be colored by her fears.
Okay.
I
and are
read
you
it
already
back.
Marking the book at that point? Are you putting, like, comments in or changing things?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
If I had a lot of time, I can see an advantage to just reading the book straight first. But as long as I'm in an editing frame of mind, it's just easier to be able to fix things as I see them.
Okay.
And I put in tons of comments, either explaining why I made a change, especially if I'm not completely sure that that's what she intended, or, you know, questions that I have or whatever. I will typically put 1 to 2 comments per page. So, you know, we're talking somewhere around 300 comments in a
novel.
Wow,
that's great.
It's very much a conversation.
So and then it goes back to Jocelyn, and she responds and changes?
Yes, and often ends up adding things that she's been thinking about while I had the book. So it's not just my changes, but also, you know, whatever she's been ruminating about. So she'll do a rewrite, and we use Microsoft Word, which I know is not everybody's favorite, and it's expensive, but the thing that it has is track changes and the ability to comment. And so that lets her see everything that I've changed. that lets me see everything that she's changed when she gives it back to me. And that really streamlines everything. So when she gives me back her second draft, I'll go through all the things that were changed, all the problem spots that we had, and I'll accept all of the changes that I think are good. I will comment on anything that I have issues with. Usually it goes back to her briefly. And then when we're both pretty sure that we have the draft about where we want it, I'll read through it one more time, essentially starting over from the beginning with new eyes as much as possible, and make sure that everything fits in. Because if you've just been changing it piecemeal, you might have created some holes that you didn't notice.
Mm. So you're also looking for those plot holes and stuff at that point. You're like, oh, okay, we added this character, but we have no idea why, or whatever.
Yeah.
Or now that he's here, something should happen with him in chapter whatever.
Right, exactly. So on some level, I am a developmental editor at this stage as well, but I'm working with a finished draft.
Okay.
Whereas a true developmental editor, because Jocelyn also works with a developmental editor, so when she is mid-draft and doesn't know where to go, she turns to John Adamus, and he's really good at coaching writers through that kind of thing, which is not my forte right now. That's something I'm working on.
So he helps her with the stuck pieces of developmental editing, and you're more working on that consistency piece.
Yes.
So I'm hearing, you know, that there's a lot of steps that we could choose to go through. One is that kind of working with someone to help us figure out how the story gets developed. The second is working with someone to figure out consistency and strength of a lot of things like character plot, setting, point of view, and so forth. And then the third thing is kind of somewhere between that consistency and some kind of copy editing. And the last thing is the proofreading thing.
Yes.
Okay. And now do you do the proofreading too, or does she, Jocelyn, as someone else, that is the proofreader at the end?
I'm a little bit of a control freak, so I definitely proofread, but I'm not
okay.
The only one who does.
So, and do you recommend people have multiple proofreaders?
The more proofreaders you can get, the better. Always. Because in my RPG editing, I'm frequently managing a project. And so when we have, you know, sometimes 5 to 10 proofreaders, all of those comments will come back to me, I'll collate them, and then go through and make the changes in the document. Never, ever have I had any two proofreaders find all the same things. Never.
Wow. So RPG means role-playing game?
Role-playing game, yeah.
Okay, so you've given us a really good kind of overview of what editors do. I'm wondering if I were going to hire an editor, what are some of the things that I want to look for as I'm interviewing editors? I don't even know how that works. Maybe you want to talk about, excuse me, you know, how I go about hiring them and what to look for.
I've been very lucky in that so far I've found all of my editing jobs through relationships, through friends of friends, through, you know, I worked on this and this other person worked on it too, and so then they come to me later to work on a different project together. And if you can network like that, that's ideal. But if you don't have a network like that, then you probably will need to go through the stage of hiring an editor. Only once have I actually gone through an interview for that, and I didn't even get the job. But I think that the way that she did it was really good. She contacted several editors. She put the word out that she was looking for an editor. And so it went out basically online in, you know, Google Plus and on Twitter and so on. And so I contacted her, and at least 4 or 5 other editors did as well. And she gave us each a couple of pages to look over and edit. Some editors will ask you to pay a small fee for that, maybe $5 or $10, because it is taking up time of theirs. But some editors will do it for free. But you should give them all the same couple chunks of pages so that you can really compare them. Also, it's kind of a mean move to send a bunch of pages to a bunch of different editors in order to try to get your stuff edited. And
it
we do all talk to each other. We will figure that stuff out at some point. I know a lot of other editors, and we do all talk. So that networking does tend to happen. So then I edited the couple of pages that she sent me, and overall she was pleased with the feedback that I gave her, but in the end she felt that she worked better with another person, who is the person who got the job. But she put my name up on her site, so you know, somebody could approach me later. But that was just sort of a way for us to kind of get a sense of whether or not we wanted to work with each other.
Mm.
We talked through email. Especially if an editor is coming from a traditional background, they may prefer the phone.
Mm.
I'm a freelance mother. I really prefer email.
Mm-hmm.
So it's going to kind of depend on what works best. And if you're the kind of person who really likes phone conversations, someone from a traditional background might be better for you. If you're someone who's working at 3 in the morning and wants to be able to email your editor and possibly even get a response back, someone who's a little less traditional might work better. Some editors are really challenging. They're going to push you. They're going to be almost rude in order to get a response from you. And if that's what works best for you, you know, sort of the drill sergeant approach, if that's what gets you out of your rut, then that's the kind of editor you want. Some are going to be more like teachers, trying to be more collaborative and supportive. And if you're, you know, if you're a little more sensitive and you would prefer an approach like that, then you want to look for an editor who's like that. And the way you do that is by communicating with them.
So kind of doing some test communications ahead of time.
Yeah.
And I, you know, I also work as an editor, and I will often want to look at some pages ahead of time because it gives me an idea of how much time it's going to take me to edit this, what
exactly.
The person writes like. But it also, I also like to have some idea either via email or writing of what the person is looking for, because some people want a lot of editing and some people want just that light touch. And I may or may not be the right person.
Right.
For that.
I have trouble having a light touch if I think you need a hard one.
Exactly. Exactly. So can we talk a little bit about payment? You know, because as I set my own fees and I've looked online at other editors' fees, they are all over the board.
They really are.
So it's hard to know. And I think when people hear how much it costs for me to do, I do something called kind of a global read of a book, kind of maybe like what Jocelyn's other friend does, where I look at a book and kind of say what's working and what's not working and different ways it could be fixed. But it costs quite a bit of money to do that, and because it takes a long time.
Yeah.
So, and, you know, if I'm going to put in that kind of time, it's going to cost a lot of money. Plus, they're not just buying the time, they're buying years of expertise. So talk a little bit about different editing rates and when it's worth it and when it's not worth it.
I think to some extent, you need to know that your investment is going to pay off. And maybe it won't be on this book because, you know, your first book out there, it's hard to say exactly how it's going to do, and you might not ever make back the editing fee that you paid for that first book.
Mm-hmm.
But if your intention is to keep writing, that first book, again, that's your audition to your readers.
Mm.
And as a reviewer, when I read a book that's been poorly written, poorly edited, I'm never reading something from that writer again. My time is too valuable, and I'm not going to do it. And so there is an investment in the future that comes from making sure your first book is as good as it can be. But again, you just need to get a sense of what it's going to cost and whether or not you can pull it off. And I certainly understand when that doesn't feel like it's possible. My rates tend to be very low because I have started out in the freelance game industry, which is a very niche market that does not make a lot of money. It's a lot of very small companies. And so what I've settled into is 1 cent a word for proofreading, 2 cents a word for copy editing, 3 cents a word for sort of a full, I will do everything it takes to get this book as good as it can be.
Mm.
And even that, which is low comparatively, even that ends up being a huge chunk of change, and I frequently end up working for 2 cents a word with people that I want to work with, even on a full edit, just because the end fee looks so big.
Yeah, no, I know exactly what you mean. And you know, just a technical question. When I work with people and, you know, it's 2 or 3 cents a word and the whole fee is going to be like $2,000, usually they pay a third up front, a third in the middle, and a third at the end. Is that kind of how you work? Is that kind of a typical way that people work?
I think I've more frequently seen half.
Okay.
Half
at the end.
Yeah, half on delivery of the first draft and then half at the end.
Okay.
So as soon as I'm given something to edit, I should get paid half. And then when we're all happy, second half.
Okay. And let's hope that everybody's happy enough for that second half to come in. But that's the hard part. So I think, you know, it's like a whole, I don't know, you could write a book on how to work with an editor, because it can be a lot of drama.
Yes.
And, you know, for those of us who do indie publishing, we get a lot of choice over our editors. For people who are doing traditional publishing or who are doing, you know, who are freelance writers and maybe working with lots of different editors at lots of different periodicals, editors come and go, and some are great to work with and some are more challenging to work with. So, you know, as an editor, I feel the same way about clients. Some are amazing to work with and some are really challenging. So I'm curious, what are some suggestions you have as an editor for writers? How can we work better with you?
One of the writers that I edit is my husband, so that always interesting. He writes for games, and so a publisher might hire both of us. So it's not so much that I'm editing his novels as we will both be hired onto the same project. So that's always interesting, and you definitely need to be very careful with the relationship when you're also living with the person. I asked him, actually, to give me some thoughts on this. One of the big things he mentioned is don't take things personally.
Mm-hmm.
No matter how much it hurts to have somebody tear your writing apart, if you have a good editor, they are not trying to hurt you. I do get the impression there are some malicious ones out there who kind of enjoy the pain, but most of them really want to help you turn out the best possible book. But editing your writing is inherently personal, and you have to try to separate that out from the feedback that you're getting, which can be very difficult. I strongly recommend not responding to your editor as soon as you've gotten edits back. And don't start your rewrites right away as soon as you've gotten edits back. Look over it, get a sense of what was said, and then put it away for a minute, you know, a day, a week, whatever you need to do, so that you're coming back to it without that emotional pain, I guess. Editing is painful. Being edited is painful. And so trying to separate that out a little bit, I think, can really, really help. Also to remember that your editor is your partner in this, that they are invested in turning out the best possible book. And another thing my husband mentioned was knowing your relationship with them. If you're a writer and you hire me freelance, then I work for you. And the idea is to turn out the best book that you want to turn out. And, you know, you're going to be the final say on that. If you're working through a publisher, there's a good chance the editor has final say. And you're going to have to live with that. So, you know, when I'm working on a game book and there are 10 writers, I have to take their individual voice out of it because it all has to sound like it's one voice. If they haven't followed the guidelines, I have to put those guidelines back in. And so it almost doesn't matter what their vision was for it. They need to make sure they're fulfilling the vision that's there. And if you're a writer for hire, that's what you have to do, and your relationship with your editor is going to be different.
Mm. is such a good point. So I have some follow-up questions. Is this a good time for them, or do you want to, do you have more for, on how to work with an editor?
Oh, I'm trying to think. My computer keeps going to sleep. It's for me to keep track of.
That's funny.
Let's see.
Well, and as you're kind of thinking, you know, one of the things that has helped me both as a writer and as an editor is to realize that the goal is to get a product that the readers will understand. And if the editor doesn't get what I'm doing, then I failed, and or the product fails. I mean, it doesn't have to be personal. It doesn't have to be that I suck. It can just be that this chapter or this piece does not work. If it does, and because I've had that argument with editors as a writer, and I've had that argument with writers as an editor, and and for me, kind of the bottom line is, and as I've written over many, many years, I now realize if the article or book or product doesn't work for the reader, then it doesn't work, and it just needs to be fixed. And the editor's my partner in helping me see that, because like your middle grade author, you know, there's when they do stuff together, it could mean lots of different things, and that may not work for all parents.
I think one caveat to that is when you're looking for an editor, make sure they understand what you're trying to do.
Mm-hmm.
I have edited Chuck Wendig, who has a very, he has his own style, and it is very action-oriented, and he abuses the heck out of punctuation, but in a way that's consistent and works for what he's doing.
Yep.
And so the first editor he worked with really wanted to fix all of that.
Yeah.
And so when I worked with him, I'm like, no, this all makes sense. As long as you're consistent, it's fine to abuse dashes this way.
It's
absolutely fine. That became a style issue. And so you want to make sure you're working with somebody who gets what you're trying to do.
Okay.
If you're writing genre fiction, make sure your editor has some sense of the genre. Because sometimes they won't get it because they don't get it.
Yep. So,
but
okay, that
all happens in the hiring process.
Yeah, and that's a good point. If you could just explain to our listeners something about kind of guidelines and style guides, then I think that you know, clearly publishing houses have guidelines and style guides, and those must be followed no matter what.
Right.
But it sounds like as you work with clients, you develop guidelines and style guides that, you know, what you do with Chuck Wendig might be really different than what you do with Jocelyn.
It is. It's totally different.
So talk a little bit about that. Is that something a writer needs to think about, or that's something an editor can kind of help them with?
One of the big, huge leaps forward with Jocelyn and me was that we realized we needed a style guide.
Mm.
And she does a style guide for every novel. It has the characters, the proper way to spell their name, any nicknames that they are called, when they should be called those nicknames. She does a lot of Regency stuff, like Jane Austen time period. And so it has all of the titles that we can call them properly.
Wow.
This is all world-building stuff that needs to be consistent, but it's her world, not mine, and so I don't know what those are supposed to be.
Mm.
And so this style guide lets me see how she pictures it. And you never want the reader to see that. It just has to be the background structure that's there behind it to make
that
sure that
sense.
It's all consistent.
And then do you make agreements? Because I know that with various editors, I've said, okay, I don't use a serial comma. Or, okay, I am going to use a serial comma. So, you know, don't yell at me. You know, or I'm going to split an infinitive, so don't freak out if I do it, because it's happening.
Right.
Do you make those decisions ahead of time, or, you know, how does that work?
One of the big ones is contractions.
Yes.
I am a big fan of contractions. Anything you can do to minimize the number of little words in your writing is a good thing. You want all your words to matter as much as possible. And so if you can combine two little words into a contraction, all the better most of the time. You need if you're not going to use a contraction, you should have a specific reason not to. Contractions should be your default, to my mind. It makes things much more conversational and easier to read. And so those are definitely things that we talk about beforehand. I'm a big fan of the serial comma. And if you tell me not to, I will cringe, but you're the boss and I won't do it. Unless I'm the managing editor on something else, in which case, guess what? You're doing the serial comma.
It's funny because, you know, I work for a number of different publications and they all have their own rules. And so it's like, okay, who am I working for today and do they use the serial comma? And, you know, I almost need a cheat sheet for myself.
I do keep a cheat sheet for myself.
That's good. Well, one of the, I was teaching last night, and you're kind of getting at a question one of the writers in my class asked, which was, when the author has one way of doing things and the editor has another way of doing things, who wins? Who gets final say? Or does it depend on the item?
I think it depends on who hired whom.
Okay.
So if it's your novel, you get final say.
Okay.
You should seriously consider what the editor is saying and think about it really, really carefully and make sure that you're not just digging in your heels and being defensive.
Okay.
But if it's your novel, if it's your book, you get final say. Frequently when I have had a conflict with a writer, it's because I was changing something to something they didn't mean. But that brings attention to the fact that what they did say was also not what they meant. And so almost all of those conflicts end up someplace else. I think it's A, I think it's B. Oh, guess what? It's E. Who knew it was so far away?
Wow. Well, Amanda, this has been great. It's always good to talk to someone who loves writing and who loves making good writing great. So thank you so much.
Thank you.
Listeners, our guest has been Amanda Valentine. I will be sending you a recording with her website so you can find out more about her and maybe hire her yourself. Thanks so much for joining us, and thanks, Amanda. Take care.
Thank you. You too.
Bye-bye.